you so much for joining us today. I am delighted to bring you a really unique guest, somebody that maybe you've read their book, you've heard of. She's an outstanding author, and I think you're really going to be excited to hear what she has to say. Her specialty is in the ADHD area. So let me introduce you. Her name is Laura Hannes-Webb. She is a PhD. She's a psychologist. She's an author, and she's a speaker. She was the author of 6 Super Skills for Executive Functioning Tools to help teams improve their focus, stay organized, and reach their goals. In addition to that, I think she's got 7 books out, and now she has a new book. So Laura, thank you for your time and welcome to our show.
I'm so glad to be here, Angela.
Absolutely. So first of all, Laura, a lot of people may or may not know you, but I wanted to find out, where can they find your books? Do they find them on Amazon? Are they in the bookstores? Or how can somebody find what the books that you've already written?
They're all on Amazon, and Barnes & Noble's will be carrying the 6 Super Skills for Executive Functioning.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. And so tell us this, I'm really curious, why, there's a lot of areas, right, that everyone can focus in, but why was ADHD so, you know, important to you to say, hey, that's the area that I'd like to focus in?
Well, for a couple reasons. One, I grew up with a brother who was diagnosed with ADHD, and this was in the 1970s before people even knew what it was. And so I grew up with it, and it was very familiar to me. And the other thing that happened was I did a postdoc for 2 years at the University of California, San Francisco on addictions. And what I saw was that addictions is in some ways an executive functioning disorder. It's once you start drinking or smoking weed or whatever it is, you can't stop. And that it seemed to be really related to ADHD. And what I have since found that turned out to be true. And that if people who have ADHD step up to get coaching and to get support for their ADHD, they can protect themselves from addictions and prevent things from getting worse.
Exactly. And I noticed that a lot of your books are focused on teens. And I know you counsel for adults, but in terms of teens, you know, do you help the parents get through of working with their teenagers as well? Is that something that you specialize in?
Absolutely. I work directly with teens. Sometimes I work with the whole family, but I also work with just parent coaching because sometimes the parents say, I want to have this connection to my kid and I want to get the tools that you have and give them to my kids. So I'm forging that relationship with them. And so for example, in the 6 Super Skills, the first super skill is finding gifts. And it's really wonderful when I help teens find those gifts, but think about how that changes the relationship for the parent to the teen when the parent is helping them to say, well, what were your biggest successes today? What was the biggest challenge that you overcame? And what happens is the teens don't feel like their parents are picking on them all the time once they shift to using these 6 super skills.
Right. So give us a little bit of a tip for interest. Let me give you an example. Let's say you have a teenager in your car and you're driving and you're getting the one answers, the I don't know, or it's fine, or, you know, whatever. How does a parent get their child to open up, or an idea of, you know, if you've got somebody that, or a teenager that's closed, you know, really doesn't, is not a talkative person. You know, there's a lot of tips in your book, but for today, what is something that someone listening could do to break that ice with their teenager?
Well, I think that a couple of things that you could do is, again, keep the focus instead of so they don't feel like they're getting picked on is, focusing on strengths, saying, what do you need? And that's a really open-ended question. And it could hopefully open up a can of worms, but it could be, and you can't get an angry response. And a teen might say, you know, I need you to leave me alone, or I need you to get off my back, or they might say, what I really need is some, you know, support and a break, and I need to see my friends, whatever that might be. You know, during COVID, people really are needing to have some social connections, and that can open up that conversation. If they do come back with an angry response, which is like, I need you to get off my back, I need you to let me stay on my technology all day, what you can do is you can say to them, even when you're angry at me, I love you. And the reason is for that, because what we know is giving teens just the language for what they're feeling and also giving them permission to feel it. You know, as psychologists, we don't think you shouldn't be angry. We think you need to feel it to heal it. And so we really want them to be able to label those feelings. And there's a research that suggests that the more precise the language you have for your feelings, the more resilient you're going to be in the rest of your life.
Exactly. And I think they think that we're picking on them a lot, almost on a daily basis. And, you know, you and I, when we were younger, we had our stresses in high school and middle school. But in today's world, what do you, you know, what are they really stressed about the most? I mean, what is on their minds? Because I think we know, but we know our child. We don't know their whole school. So what do you find that's really going on with teens today that really is a concern for them?
Well, I think the big thing is going to be social media and feeling rejected or included or not included, or, there's so many pressures these days in terms of, you know, sexting and texting and those kinds of things. And they're navigating romantic relationships and friendships, and that we all know that social media actually, often makes people feel depressed because everybody's showing the best parts of their lives, but they're not showing their struggles. And so many, many teens are struggling alone, thinking that everyone has it great and I don't. Well, the teens that seem like they have it great are thinking the same thing.
Right. Exactly. And do you find that girls are more open to talking than boys, or do you find that 50-50?
I would say that girls tend to be more open to talking, but I think that boys can talk, and it may be that you need to kind of get them started a little bit more with more, you know, asking questions, open-ended questions, you know, starting to ask them, you know, instead of digging deep into their emotional terrain, it might be, you know, what do you stand for? What do you believe in? And asking questions. Again, looking for the positive. When was the time you felt appreciated today? What was the best thing that happened to you in the last week? So when you start to look for the positive, they kind of get out of their shell and say, oh, this is a chance. I'm not going to get picked on, or I'm not, you know, trying to, have to bare my soul. And while emotional regulation is something that I do, of course, in therapy, it's not a place to probably start with boys unless they start there, teens.
And that is a new term that's been around for maybe longer, but more, I guess people are more aware of it in the last year to 2 years. So would you mind kind of giving a breakdown of what emotional regulation is for our listeners? Because they may or may not know.
Right. So emotional regulation means, it was almost what I said about anger, is that some people think I shouldn't feel angry, I shouldn't feel sad. And then they don't want to talk about it because they're embarrassed to talk about it. And we also know that you have to talk about it to not act it out. And so if a teen can communicate with you what they're angry about, and they know that that's okay to feel angry, that anger is setting boundaries. One tool that I use is kind of an emotion checklist. And so this is one that works even for boys that don't like to talk about their feelings. They'll say, when was a time that you felt angry? When was a time that you felt sad? When was a time that you felt anxious? When was a time that you felt guilty? And then I shift over to the positive. When was a time you felt happy? When was a time you felt grateful? When was a time that you were excited? When was a time that you felt secure? And that has like a method to the madness, because you do want to feel those feelings, but you don't want to leave someone hanging there with all these negative emotions. So after you go through the positive emotions, it's called resourcing. You're helping them to resource and to soothe over those negative emotions.
I love that. I really do. And I have so many questions for you. But one of the questions that I really want to ask is, you know, we have a lot of educators, teachers that listen to this podcast. And, you know, I really feel for them right now, because with this pandemic that we're in, you know, they're having limited classes, and we don't really even know what they're going through right now. However, you know, what suggestions do you have for teachers today in general, whether there's a pandemic going on or not? You know, kids are kids, teens are teens. They still have a lot of the same emotions that are still going on, fears and anxiety as well. So in terms of teachers, you know, what can they do when they see a student that, you know, that they know something's going on, but, you know, there's that boundary. So what can they do? Because the reason I ask is I had in my high school, I had a teacher that really just brought me aside and just showed me she cared when I had lost my sister during high school. And that has stayed with me my whole life. So for all of you teachers that are listening, I'm so grateful for what you do. But for you, Laura, what advice could you give to those teachers?
If you want to reach out to someone in a way that is going to feel safe but may open up a lot of interesting conversations, is you can say, you know, what are your goals for this class? And finding goals is the second super skill of the six super skills. And one of the reasons it's so important, and this is what parents miss and teachers can miss, when a child is really struggling in a class, they think that they don't care. They think that they're not motivated. But what I almost always find when I work with families is that the kids actually have goals for themselves, but they're failing at getting those goals. And so I think that parents and teachers can join by saying, when they ask that, because it's not that they don't have the same goals that the teachers and parents have, it's they don't know how to bridge the gap between setting the goal and getting the goal. And that helps people to join together. And also it helps to figure out, you know, what are the outcomes that you're looking for? It may be that for certain people during coronavirus with online learning, that their goals are going to be to show up every day and not be on my cell phone during the classes. It could be, my goal is to try as hard as I can. My goal is to hit singles and doubles. I'm not looking for that home run right now because there's so many other stressors going on.
Right. And a lot of parents right now are, you know, teaching at home, and sometimes they're doing it part-time. Some are doing it full-time. And this podcast is a lot about focus. And I want to talk to you about that, on how you focus. But for those parents that are home right now with kids that they're teaching, and let's say that, you know, they have a teenager or a middle school student that's really shut down. You know, you and I talked a little bit about social isolation, and isolation right now during this time has got to be impacting not only the parents, but it's got to be impacting the students.
Absolutely. And I think that for the parent, one of the things you may want to focus on during this time is to privilege the relationship. And of course, we worry about our kids' grades, we worry about the education that they're getting. But let's say, for example, you were to say, I don't want you to be using technology as much. And they fight back and they fight back, and it creates this tension between the parent and the child. One thing you might want to try is to say, this is our position. These are the limits we have on you using technology. And you state it clearly, but then you say, what's your position on this? And you listen to the teen, and they may say, well, when I play video games, that's the only way I can connect with people. We can't go outside. We're not going to school. And really listen to them, validate it, and connect with them. There's, what's that quote? To connect is all. And I think that during COVID, as a parent, you may want to put the relationship with your child ahead of what we might, you know, academic outcomes. And I know that that's hard to hear, but your child's emotional well-being will be to know that someone is there that hears them, that understands them. And so it doesn't always have to be a trade-off either. Sometimes that connection can lead to improved outcomes in education.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because when we're parents, we're not trained to be teachers, right? This is all new for many. Many are better than others. You know, and I've talked to a couple of people that have said, you know, this is not me. I'm not cut out for this. In those situations, should they go and talk with the school system or the teacher? Because my son is now in college, and I had someone ask me that the other day. And I said, you know, interesting enough, we're going to be talking to a psychologist in that area. So what do you do in that situation? Should they, you know, talk about maybe transitioning and going into the school system? And I know that's a tough question because that's such a personal answer.
What do you mean, that should the parent talk to the teachers, or do
yes.
you
about saying, you know, hey, my son is really struggling, or my daughter's struggling, you know, even, you know, there is a pandemic, should we make that, you know, transition?
Yes, I think that parents should talk with teachers in terms of what are some accommodations that are reasonable. They may be able to say, we really, you know, we want to prioritize our child's mental health. What kind of accommodations can we make to help him thrive in this situation? And what kind of resources are available for supporting our child, him or her, in this situation? And letting the teachers know whatever the special circumstances might be, keeping those channels of communication is going to be helpful for, I call it advocating for your teen, anything that you can ask for, but being also using flexible thinking in terms of, you know, keeping the relationship open with the teacher also.
Exactly. That's perfect, because really, you know, it was interesting because I sat there and I thought, you know, you really can't call like a neighbor or someone to come in and help you. You know, you could, but that might, you know, again, we're worrying about, you know, safety at this point. But one of the things that came to mind is always there's online tutors, right? And that may be a solution to, you know, helping. So there's two things I want to ask you around that. For online, if somebody's looking for tutors online, is there resources to find that, or is there a company or organizations that they can go to find tutors online at this time?
I don't know about any specific companies, but I do think that the idea of finding some kind of support, one of the words what we use is called scaffolding. Someone, and some schools, again, I would go to the school first and ask teachers and school for those referrals for tutors. So for example, the teachers often know tutors and people that they trust and that other students have worked with, because they've been doing this for so long, they know, oh, this person's really good. So I would talk to specific teachers and maybe all of the teachers, and, you know, send them this could be an email. We're looking for some tutoring support. Do you have any recommendations? And that's a really great way to get it.
You know, that's great. And I'll add on to that. One thing that we did with our son was that nothing was working at that time. And so we contacted the universities and went to the certain departments. If it's a math issue, an English issue, you know, you go to that department head. And I emailed them and said, do you have any tutors or students that might be helpful? And they sent us a list of probably 20 students that were very affordable and available. And it was really great. And so that's another idea for that. One of the other things that we always talk about is, you know, isolation, even when you're working or mm-hmm. you're helping your child or whatever. And I think sometimes a lot of this is you've got to keep yourself calm. Right? Because if you're not calm, your student's not going to be calm. And mm-hmm. so with that being said, I do want to talk a little bit about that, because we haven't talked about isolation in this time. And so take us down a road of, you know, for the parent, if they feel isolated, what they can do. If a student feels isolated right now, what can they do? If you have any suggestions, and if you don't, that's okay. I just know that we have a lot of listeners that will send us questions around those areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I want to say is to start in the family. And that would mean to start having these conversations about where you're taking off the table performance demands. You're taking off the table, why aren't you doing the dishes? You take off the table, you know, we're really concerned about technology. And just begin to have some of these conversations, which again, I mean, I'm going to map them onto the 6 super skills, because these are going to be ways to be helping your child in a way that feels like you're joining with them. So, you know, again, why don't, if you're speaking with your family, you can say, have one family member say to the other one, what do you think this person's 3 biggest strengths are? And helping them to come up with these positive adjectives to describe themselves. And so everyone's kind of getting that feel good. And so it has to start in the family. And then after that, what I would do is I would look at what are the special interests in your family. And some sports are starting to meet. I found there was one boxing gym that was allowed to go outside, and they had opened because they just took the boxing bags outside in this big space. And I signed up one of my kids for a boxing class in the middle of all of this.
Wow, that's great. Yeah.
And so looking for things like that, that are open, and then they get to meet other people there in a socially distanced way while getting that physical exercise. And in terms of that isolation, you also want to notice that physical exercise is going to be so important, because it boosts our focus and it boosts our emotions. And so if you can find any kind of an exercise group that has some socially distanced, it could be a walking group, it could be a hiking group. You can look, look in your community. There are some things that have opened in many places in socially distanced ways. So I would search for those and find those connections.
That's excellent advice. With individuals that have teenagers, this is a very common issue, is that we have teenagers, especially boys, the boys will actually, they'll come home and they'll get on the computer, and then they are playing for hours upon hours upon hours. And when they're younger, you have some control over that, right? And as you and I know, and any of our listeners, if you have any questions about that, anyone, a child with ADHD, sometimes they have depression or anxiety, sometimes that go along with that. But with the topic of video games with a child with ADHD or a teenager, and we have a lot of these, you know, shooting games, things like this. You know, I am, you know, my son is actually in college, but I think I was torn as well as, you know, what are the limits? Mm-hmm. What are the limits that you do? Because especially now they're home, right? They go to their room and they said that that is their outlet. But is there any new information or research that a parent saying, hey, you know, when do I cut it off? Do I let them do it? Do, you know, what do we do in this time?
I'll have a couple of thoughts about that. I mean, I want to start with a very specific strategy, which is having a conversation about it. One of the first questions you can ask your teen is, what are the benefits of video games? And it seems like that's a scary question to ask, because you're encouraging it even more. But really listen to them. And there are some actual benefits. Again, the main one, especially during this time, being they do connect with other people. Mm-hmm. But then after that question, ask your teen, but what are the negative consequences of this? And they may struggle with that, but you can say, well, what could you do if you're playing video games 5 hours a day? What could you accomplish during those 5 hours? And you can say, you could work on your grades, you could study, you could get in shape, you could start a business. You could do and talk about all of the things they could do in that time, and that they're not moving their life forward. And this is why setting goals becomes so important, because they often do have goals for themselves, whether it's social or, sports or special activities. It could be playing an instrument or whatever that is. And what I want to point out with the research is there's a huge gap between the recommended number. I mean, it's almost comical, the recommendations and the actual statistics. So for example, the World Health Organization and the Pediatric Association recommends 2 hours a day. And I know that parents are going to hear that and go, uh-oh, we're in trouble. But the research shows that the average teen is spending 7 hours a day on non-schoolwork. And that could be video games or YouTube videos, whatever it is, or social media. That includes all of those things. But so we have this huge gap, and we have not figured out how to bridge that gap. But one thing is, what are the benefits of what you're doing and what are the costs? And you want them to see the negative consequences of their own actions. And one other tip is that to have them switch around that they use video games as a reward rather than a distraction from doing their schoolwork.
So that's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as a parent, enforcing that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to get into your background, but one last question around this area that I did want to make sure that we mentioned was the word accommodations. Mm-hmm. It is amazing to me how many people do not know what that word means. And I, for all of you listeners, I am going to raise my hand. I did not know what that word accommodations was until my son was a junior in high school, and he had ADHD since the fifth grade. And I was a little surprised about that. And when I talked with the school system, their answer was, we asked you if you wanted assistance. And to me, in my mind, that and accommodations meant someone sitting right next to my son, working with him, and I did not want to embarrass him. I have asked so many people that question, and that's exactly what they think it is, but that is not what it is. So would you mind letting our listeners know what accommodations means and how it can be beneficial to their child?
Yeah. And so first, let me say, this is all going to be different during COVID. How people
right, get of course.
During COVID is different. But I think one of the biggest one is going to be how you take your tests. And so with accommodations, you can get untimed tests. You can ask to take a test outside of the classroom, because for ADHD people, you're so distracted that that's not a good environment. And so they can take it in a room by themselves with extended time is usually the best outcome. The other thing you can ask for is sort of a different level of assignments, which means, and it's so interesting because I remember before COVID, teachers would push back against this so much. But now what we all saw happen during COVID was, you know, the school is is being shortened. The days are shortened because you can't have, because the teachers aren't really capable of delivering online teaching from, you know, 8 to 3. And so many school systems have already figured out that they have fewer time in the classroom and shorter assignments because everyone's trying to make accommodations for the known stressors. Another interesting point is that the school systems always said we have to start at 8, even though all the research showed that the teenage brain, the most important thing is sleep, and that one of the best things you could ever do for a teenager was have the day start later. All the schools said we can't do that. And now, you know, the school systems are starting later, they're online, you know, and I know last year, many of the schools, they were non-synchronous, meaning you just kind of showed up and did what you were supposed to do, but you didn't have to be there at a specific time. And it's working, you know, so these, I think that what we're going through in COVID is going to show that we actually can deliver an education that offers these accommodations.
Right. And sleep, would you mind? I mean, sleep, you know, it's interesting. We just did a podcast on refocusing on brain health. And there was so much talk around how sleep is important, but especially for teenagers that have ADHD, how does sleep affect them?
Well, sleep is the number one brain builder, and you need to get that sleep. And then the other thing is teenagers need more than 8 hours a night. They need actually 9 hours. So they need even more sleep and are often getting less. So one of the things that when in the 6 super skills, I talk about finding focus as one of the 6 super skills. And I use what I call the science of attention management. And sleep is one of the number one brain builders for focusing, but so is exercise. So is time in nature. So is having breaks. And that was one thing that was missing in the typical school day, which people may be getting more of now. And in addition to that, stress management is going to increase your attention. So all of these things, you know, whether it's mindfulness or breathing tools, all of these things are going to increase focus and help students to do better.
And also not just for students, right? Just anyone. And
Absolutely.
You don't have to have ADHD to know that you need that for focus. And so let's switch gears here to you for a second. You know, you have a new book out, and I want to hear about that in a minute. But, you know, writing a book, we were talking about that before the podcast, that just to start is difficult, so difficult for so many people. So whether you're writing a manuscript or you are writing a cookbook or you're just journaling, how do you focus? But what do you recommend for other people on how they can focus? Because writing is really, you're either great at it or you're not, but there's a lot of people who could do it if they could just focus.
Yeah, I mean, I think almost anyone could be a good writer. It's like a lot of things. The more you do it, the better you get. And, but the way that I focus is one of the super skills is chunking, which is what is the smallest chunk I can do or the biggest chunk that I can do. And so I write personally in chunks, which means I take the stress off and I say, my goal here is just to write for a half an hour. And then the thing about that, when you put it in a time limit, it doesn't feel like this overwhelming task. And the second thing that I do that is related to that is I take off the perfectionism. And so if you are just going to be writing for a half hour and your goal is to just you fill up that time with the writing, you're not worried at that moment about, you know, is the grammar right? And the other way to think about writing is rewriting. So get down that messy first draft, and then the editing process comes later. So if you're trying to write like a really clean copy at the same time that you're trying to structure your thoughts, those are too many things that are happening. So, right. Mm-hmm. So think of writing as rewriting. Think of that you'll go back and edit it. Don't be a perfectionist and do it in time chunks that you can stay focused.
Got it. And for you, so tell us about like your day. How do you start your day? And then also, why did you want to be a psychologist? What, you know, I always find it so fascinating because everybody's got a journey on how they got to where they're at now. And you've had a successful journey. So if you wouldn't mind, tell us how you got here and then tell us on a day-to-day basis what your life's like.
So how I got here was that when I was a teenager, it's the irony, and I don't want to say the irony, sort of the opposite of irony, sort of the meaningfulness of one thing can change a person's life is my mom gave me a book, and it was called Go For It. And I have looked for that book, and I've never found it since it was so many years ago. And it was just a book about goal setting. And I think when you're a psychologist, you know, you're so sophisticated about all the things that are helpful, that goal setting seems like a little too simple. But what happened is it completely changed my life because I started setting goals. And if I were going to give advice to someone, the one thing that I would say is that if you don't feel like you're reaching your goals, just keep going. Because when I look back, I had so many times where I was like, this goal setting isn't working. Why isn't this working? But when I take the long picture, it's like I had all these bumps in the road and things didn't go the way I wanted to, but I'm always kind of amazed. Like the goals that I set way back then, actually I've achieved most of them, but it really wasn't a straight path. It wasn't an easy path. There were failures and setbacks and so many things. So it's really my life, I would say, is a testament to the long haul that things will work out. And one of the reasons I wanted, and so that got me interested in psychology, that just this one simple tool that is not a very sophisticated tool, had a really powerful effect. And then when I was in college, I went to the Student Counseling Center to get some therapy. And, I know that student counseling centers at colleges these days are overfilled and it's hard to get in, but at that time they weren't. And I got to get in right away and talk to someone weekly for quite a long time. And I just found it so helpful. And, at that time I was kind of having all these ideas. Do I want to go into business school? One time I wanted to be a chemistry major. And I just think about that. But that experience made me shift over to being a psychology major. And at that point, I just loved it so much. For me, studying psychology was like eating candy. I just loved it. It was so fascinating to me. And then I was able to keep going through that process of setting goals.
I love that. And it's rewarding because, I talk to a lot. I'm not a psychologist, by the way. I am a business person. I'm a mom. And I have ADHD, so I completely understand this. But, you know, what I find is when I talk with a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists is that one of the most rewarding things about that career field is that if you have patients that you're meeting with who are showing progress and the success that goes with that, it's kind of like you grow with them and you get excited and you love to see them do great. And that's the goal, right? Is to help them through their journey.
Exactly. And I mean, I think one of the ways I also stay focused is I have a mission statement. And I mean, I've trained in so many different treatment approaches. I've trained in addictions. I've trained in so many areas. But my mission statement is find gifts and meet needs. And the reason for finding gifts is because it is only through that, so much research has now shown that you have to have self-efficacy to have motivation. So when we talk about someone being unmotivated, part of that is that they lack confidence in themselves. And so building confidence will boost motivation. Building confidence will boost your ability to set goals. Would I have been able to set a goal to be a psychologist if I lacked confidence? I wouldn't have set that goal. And so you have to boost up that confidence. And that's why finding the gifts is so important. And as you can imagine, we talk about mood regulation. So much of mood regulation is about flexible thinking. We ruminate about the things that went wrong. We ruminate about our failures. So when we shift it and say, what were your successes? What did you feel appreciated about this week? You're regulating their mood at the same time. So that's why that one comes first for me and is so powerful. That's and then meeting needs is what we were talking about. It can be accommodations. I mean, these are real barriers in education for kids with ADHD. And by the way, this is true for adults with ADHD. And there's a growing movement in the workplace to allow accommodations in the workplace.
Yes.
And again, irony of irony, in COVID, people have figured out, people can work from home. And that was one accommodation that people with ADHD wanted sometimes and would not be able to get. And that you can see for someone with ADHD, the time it takes for the commute and all the distractions in the workplace can make it hard to focus. And that doesn't mean work from home 5 days a week, which now in many places it is that.
Right.
But just to have that break in the middle of your week was what people were asking for. And so now, again, we know that people can be very productive and have some work from home time.
Absolutely. So your book, so first of all, you said it was coming out in October. Did you say October 1st or 3rd?
First.
Mm-hmm. First, October 1st. That's so exciting, which is going to be right around. And can you give us just a brief overlay of, first of all, the name, what it's about, and where they can get it?
So the 6 super skills for executive functioning, tools to help teens improve focus, stay organized, and reach their goals. And this was a long journey for me to get to this. You know, my earlier books were about the gifts of ADHD. And this has taken it a little bit farther because I ask my clients at the end of sessions, what was the most helpful thing today and what was the least helpful, so that I can be responsive to them. And in that process, what I discovered was I came up with 38 of the tools that people found the most helpful repeatedly. And then over the last 15 years, I distilled those, because 38 tools is kind of hard to just, you know, it's not very memorable, let's say. So I encapsulated that into the 6 super skills, which are finding gifts, setting goals, chunking goals into stepping stones, boosting motivation, mood management, and then finding focus. And so you'll find those super skills in the book. And I also want to say that if you're an adult, it would still be worth it to read it, because what it means by writing it for teens is we had to make it short and simple, and the graphics have all these breakout boxes, so if your attention doesn't get bored as easily. So it's a really succinct, simple, fun, friendly book meant for teens, but I think would make an easy read for adults.
I get it. That's really amazing. And I can't wait to get it myself. So so they can get it, you said, online at Amazon. They can get it at Barnes & Noble soon, or where can they get this?
Yes, it's on Amazon, and it's also in Barnes & Noble.
Oh, perfect. Well, I'm going to get it myself. I'm excited to read it further. So first of all, Laura, I could sit here and talk to you for hours. I think you're so helpful and have so much knowledge in this field. And I know people that are listening are going to get something from this. There's so much in this podcast episode that I think people are going to listen to it more than once, because there's a lot of things in here that are very helpful. So one thing I have to ask you, though, is one question that we ask everyone at the end of this podcast. And it's so unique because music is so healing. It can change your mood. It can bring you up, it can bring you down, or it can keep you balanced. But if you are going somewhere today in your car, and it's really important that you know, whether you're speaking or you're meeting with the family or something, and you've got to be really focused, what is the music or what is the song that you listen to?
Well, I mean, this may not be the best focus song, but I think one that really, I think, encaptures my approach is True Colors by Cyndi Lauper, because when you listen to it, it's so much about who you are as beautiful. And people with ADHD feel like they're misfits. They feel like they just don't get it. They feel like they're out of step with other people. And that is creativity. And that's what so much of my work about is show your true colors, like who you are is good. And of course, you know, so much of my work has been about finding those strengths of emotional sensitivity and creativity and empathy and all of those things. But in this book here is about the 6 super skills. You have some to build some skills, but really the deepest message is true colors. Be true to yourself. But I see your true colors shining through. I see your true colors, and that's why I love you. So don't be afraid to let them show your true colors are beautiful like a rainbow.
I love that. One last question. I know I said I didn't have any more, but this is really important. And you just mentioned it. The word empathy, we all need more of that today. Mm-hmm. And what I find, And what I hear from other parents is that with teens, it's really, really hard, especially with boys. It's really hard to help them find empathy. So how, do you have any suggestions, or what can they do, or what can the student do to find that empathy? Because it's got to come from within. But as a parent, we always want to help our child, right? So is there any direction that we can put them in to find that?
Well, I think in terms of having these conversations, like if you're trying to resolve a situation, let's say it's video games, and you say, this is our position, you can use the video games only as rewards once you get your work done. And then you say, well, what's your perspective? And you let them say their side. But the way to teach them empathy, and this is just a little basic, but it's a first step, is ask them to repeat back to you exactly what you said. And so, and you can, and just do this in short moments, short bursts. This isn't going to, you know, they're not going to tolerate this for too long, but just in having them listen to you in a way that they can repeat back to you what they heard is the first step in empathy. And of course, we hope that over time, you know, people are listening and then they can understand that perspective, not just hear it and be able to repeat it back. But, you know, what they say, baby steps, that's the first step.
Perfect. That's wonderful. Well, again, thank you so much for being on our show. You know, if you're listening to this, her book is coming out on October 1st. Be sure to look it up. Her name is Laura Honos Webb, and it's HONOS-Webb, WEBB. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. Her website, by the way, I'll put this on our podcast, which is, we have a website just for the podcast, which is refocuswithangela.com. And we will put her information on here as well. Her website, by the way, is ADD is a gift, and that's ADDISAGIFT.com. So again, Laura, thank you. We graciously appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Angela. This was a lot of fun.
Today's podcast was sponsored by Refocus, the creative office, where we create products that make your life easier. If you haven't checked out our new website, it's timetorefocus.com. The podcast website is refocuswithangela.com. On our Refocus website, you're going to see some new items added this week that you can't live without. They are definitely essential items that you can't find anywhere, and you'll definitely want to get your hands on those. So we've got several new products coming out. So follow us on YouTube, on our social media, on our websites, and we thank you so much for listening, and have a great week.